and welcome to the Skip to the End podcast. This is episode... What episode is this?
12.
12?
Yeah.
Already? Good God almighty. On this episode, we're going to review the biographical true crime drama film Foxcatcher. That's what Wikipedia calls it anyway. We're also going to have a rewatch. What film are we rewatching, Adam?
The Phantom. Sorry, I was just sitting there thinking it's 24 weeks of my life. I'm not getting back.
It's a good thing.
No, The Phantom Menace we're rewatching.
Good God.
Which is an hour and a half that I'm not getting back.
We're also going to talk about our top three time travel movies, and we're going to talk about films where we'd like to change the outcome. Maybe we'd change an element of the film, or we'd change the ending. What else are we doing, Mark?
We've got a competition to announce the winners. So the T-shirt, as well as the signed photo from RJ Mitty. So it's time to actually reveal who's won it, which is going to be good.
So as I've mentioned their names already, I'm Ben.
Adam.
And I'm Mark.
So let's get started.
Foxy lady.
The topic for this week, then, was our top three time travel movies. So, Mark, start us off.
Right, I'm going straight in there with my number three, which is Flight of the Navigator.
Jesus.
Old school. What a surprise. As well, it's an 80s film.
Is it the greatest film ever made?
Of course. Without, you know, a shadow of a doubt. Have you both seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a classic
not
film.
Not since I was a nipper, though.
No, of
course. I was going to say, it's been a while for myself as well. But...
So it's also the story of David, who's kidnapped. He's kidnapped in 1978, and then he's brought back in 1986. It's one of those films that you go back and watch now, and it does look dated. It's proper 80s. But I always wanted to be that kid. I always wanted to sit in that, you know... spaceship with, is it Scuzz Bucket? That little, remember that little creature?
I don't recall.
That used to, come on, it's a classic. You should be watching it all the time. But yeah, it's a really good film about time travel. It's not one that you both would have probably thought of, and I wanted to surprise you with a bit of a random choice. But an 80s film, time travel, hey.
I know you love your 80s. I need to see that one out. It's one of those that you think would be on telly more than it is.
It probably is, but you probably avoided it.
Do you know, the film I always lump it in with, I always lump it in with The Neverending Story.
Yeah,
I just think of those as being a similar era.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's a lot of 80s films that are on TV every week, and you think that would be one of them.
Yeah, but I don't recall coming across that in a long while.
Ooh. The spacecraft is unbelievable in it as well. It looks really cool. He's got like the way he steers it. It's like a big gear stick, like silver gear stick, and it's awesome. It's really, watch it again sometime.
I will do, see if it's on Netflix.
Or well, the rewatch.
So yeah, nice simple one. Ben, you're number three.
Okay, for my number three, I've gone with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Not the first one, not Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Awesome.
I think the sort of general wisdom is that the first one's better than the second, as is often the case.
Uh-huh.
But it was always the second one that I enjoyed more, because I loved when Ted and Bill went to hell, and they ended up having to... play games with death and had to beat death to be able to return back to the earthly plane. And instead of playing him at, you know, something like chess, they played him at battleships and Twister. And it's absolute genius, because they get killed by their evil robot doubles and sent to hell. And it's a hilarious film. And I love the fact that there's a script going around for a third one.
Yeah, and, I heard about this.
And Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter, they're working hard to get it made. I think it's been in production hell for years.
Like, just not.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think they had sort of an outline for what they wanted to do for years, and now they've finally actually got a script that's ready to go, and Winter and Reeves say, this is the real deal, it could be great, and now it's just a matter of getting the financial backing and whatnot. But Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, hilarious film, love it.
I read actually that film was going to come out about 5 years ago, but they still couldn't find anyone to teach Keanu Reeves how to act, because he completely forgot. So the major delay is that he's going to acting school to learn how to act again, because the actual last film...
So he'll never get made.
Film he actually acted was The Bogus Journey. It was the one he actually was qualified an actor.
The easiest thing he's ever done is actually act as his robot double. Because he didn't have to do anything.
I genuinely hold those films to be his best acting.
Yeah.
Because as you sort of...
Well,
it's the
only acting.
Certainly not
Constantine. No. As a bit of just sort of a spacey stoner dropout, he's very good. But ask him to portray a real emotion, not so much.
No.
Yeah.
I always imagine him like, Keanu, your wife and kids are dead. Oh, right. Keanu, you've won the lottery. Oh, right. Literally, that's him for everything.
Are you aware that his girlfriend actually died in a car accident and had a miscarriage?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that actually...
Yeah.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, that's actually true.
This is not the plot to Devil's Advocate.
No.
No. Right.
It's a nice way to bring the podcast down there, mate. Cheers.
Oh, that's just right. What Mark just said. It was a bit close to the bone, really, wasn't it?
Well, okay, then, well, you know, his mum and dad are dead. He'd be like, oh, right. Anyway, let's move on from Keanu Reeves' family all dying.
Let's please.
Your number three choice,
Adam. My number three is a film called Safety Not Guaranteed.
Brilliant film.
Absolutely love it. So it's Jake Johnson, Aubrey Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
It's with Mark Duplass, as you said. And the director is actually Colin Trevorrow, who isn't really a household name, but people might recognise him as he's directing Jurassic World this year. But I absolutely love this film. It's a film, the whole premise of it is, it's not really time travel per se. The whole film starts because Jake Johnson, who plays a magazine writer, mm-hmm. journalist, decides that he wants to investigate an article, a kind of a classified, that comes up saying, wanted, someone to go travel in time with, safety not guaranteed, bring your own weapons, you'll be paid when you get back.
Yeah.
So it's just this great story about Darius, who Aubrey Plaza plays, and how her relationship kind of blossoms with Mark Duplass's character. And it's just this great story, and in the end he turns out that the guy she's kind of fallen for actually has invented the time machine, and it's just government agents are after him throughout the whole thing. It's just a really, really funny, cool, it's a strange romantic style comedy film, but with this time travel element to it as well.
It is really good. It's a quirky little indie film that I highly recommend to people. And the funny thing is, it was based on a real thing. It was a real magazine where someone, or paper, that someone genuinely did put an article in saying, you know, partner for time travel, safety not guaranteed. And they thought, brilliant, let's make a film on that.
I've never seen that film, but listening to what you guys said, and if it's got Audrey Plaza in it, then it's definitely a reason to watch it. But yeah, I want to see that film.
Yeah, get involved. Very
I will.
Definitely do, man. Definitely do. It's a great film. A lovely, like Ben said, quirky little indie movie.
Well, everyone I know who's seen it says you should see it, so I probably should actually do what they say. let's go to number two. Yeah, I'm hoping neither of you got this. Donnie Darko.
It's actually my number two as well.
Oh, wow. Go
We're
on,
gonna
then.
Stop
Just
doing
go
this. Do you want me to change my choice?
No, you talk about
Donnie
Darko.
You're going to intellectually talk about Donnie Darko. I'll say I liked it because there's a guy dressed up as a rabbit.
Yeah, Frank the rabbit. Yeah. Frank ruled.
So I can change my choice.
No, stick with it. Talk about the film.
Donnie Darko was one of the first Region 1 DVDs I bought.
Yeah.
Everyone talked about this film that came out and it got put on a shelf and never released in an actual theatre. So I got a Region 1 player, which isn't illegal, which is fine, you know, and imported the DVD at the time. And I remember it was about a year before it came out over here. Put it on, and I was just blown away. I was like, what is this? I finished it and put it straight back on again. Mm-hmm. One of the first ones I've ever done that with. Pushed it back on. I remember the only reason I think I wanted to see it is people said it's one of Drew Barrymore's coolest performance, and it was at the time it was over. And I was like, well, doesn't it? She's not even in it really that much.
Barely,
really.
Yeah.
Look back at it now. But at the time, Jake, how do you pronounce his surname?
Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. He was nobody. You know, it was his debut, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was necessarily his debut, but it was his first film that anyone cared about.
Yeah, that anyone saw. And, you know, we recently talked about him in
Nightcrawler.
Thank you. But again, after Nightcrawler, that's one of his greatest performances, and I absolutely love him in that film. And the whole concept, and people then talking about it and coming up to me in the street and stopping and talking about, have you seen Donnie Darko? What's your beliefs on it? What do you think happened? And everyone had a different kind of output for it, which no one was correct. Everyone kind of argued.
It did become this huge cult film.
Yeah.
Like, massive. I mean, I remember I didn't see it until about probably 2008, 2009 myself, and it got recommended to me by several people. And then the moment I saw it, I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
It was just so crazily brilliant that it could have only been written by a madman.
Richard Kelly. And he's the same guy. Remember when I had Southland Tales? Was it a...
Was it like a film that no one...
Guilty Pleasure.
Guilty Pleasure, and I was telling you about how wacky that film is. Yeah. And that was from the mind of the same man. He is a loon in the best possible way.
Yeah, so to say, it's that whole debate between a fine line between genius and insanity, isn't it? But Donnie Darko is one of those ones that sort of treads both sides of the line.
It was a real big film for me when I saw it. I saw it at the cinema when it finally did come out in the UK. I was there with my girlfriend at the time, and she didn't really care for it either way, whereas I was mesmerised. And the thing I liken it to is the TV show Lost. Lost, for me, the the whole point of watching Lost wasn't just watching the episode, it was then going on the internet and reading people's theories about what the hell we just witnessed. And I spent hours and probably weeks of my life researching Lost and all these theories and Easter eggs. And I did the same thing with Donnie Darko, because like you say, with the time travel, what's happened? Is it time travel or is it in his mind? And the amount of theories and things that I read online, and this film fascinated me then and does just as much now. And there are some great performances in it, like Patrick Swayze.
Amazing.
As the sleazy paedophile with his kiddie porn dungeon.
It's crazy, yeah. And it is a really random film. If you try and describe it to someone, they are like, what are you on about? Mm. And you need to see it to kind of believe it. But like you said, you'll still see things now in certain magazines. They'll put articles up saying, like, there's a scene that you may have not noticed in the background. If you pause it, like you said, with the Lost and all that, if you look closely, you can see that there's a clock, and if you look at the time in the next scene, it's completely different, so it shows it isn't time travel. I love all that. It's, you know, everyone's got a different input to it, and like you said, it's I think that was one of the most googled films for a long time, trying to people, what was that about?
Yeah, brilliant film, absolutely brilliant.
So Adam, number two.
Okay, yeah, so seeing as you both did the same film, my number two is Terminator.
Nice.
I knew you were going to have that in your list. It's a very, very good choice.
It's not necessarily per se about time travel, but if a robot's sent back through time to kill someone, it's about time travel.
Yeah. It's a time travel film, it's
absolutely
fine.
Yeah.
But anyone who watches The Terminator, even now, even with how slightly dated it looks, and I think we briefly spoke about this with the Westworld rewatch, and how there was effects they did in that, even though it's before Terminator, that looked a lot better than Terminator's effects in some respects.
Yeah.
But even though it looks dated, the whole storyline of it is absolutely brilliant. And I can't think of a villain, say, from my childhood that terrified me more.
Freddy Krueger.
Than Arnie's Terminator. Because in later films with Krueger, he got stopped. Yeah. Whereas this Terminator was just going and going and going. There's even the bit where all the skin's gone, the clothing's gone, it's just this mechanical skeleton now, just still going for them. And I loved it.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree.
You'll find a lot of people always getting an argument which is better, Terminator or Terminator 2. And I've been there with beers before and had arguments, like full on screaming arguments.
We've done
people.
It on the cast.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. I said to you, it literally depends on which one you just watched. If you watch Terminator 2, you think, oh, it's better than Terminator. Then you go back and watch Terminator 1, all of a sudden, oh, no, it's not better than 2's better than that.
I think I always reflexively say that 2 is better, but that's because it has more memorable big scenes. Like, you know, the chase down that, I think it's like the dry bed of a canal.
Oh, yes.
It's always in American films that are set in LA, I think. It always has that same thing. There's that big chase scene down there, and obviously you remember...
With the big truck and...
Yeah, and you remember the T-1000 running after the car and putting his claw things into the back
Incredible.
Of the car. It's those big scenes that I always remember. That's why I was thinking 2 is better.
The death for Todd and things like that. Yeah. But I mean, Terminator 1 for me, I just had to have it in the list. It has to go in there.
Very good choice.
Is it really number one time already?
It is.
Well, it's probably come to no surprise. It's going to be Back to the Future.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be in your list as well.
We've recently actually won the first Skip to the End podcast, which is iTunes, if you want to go back and listen. I discussed when I went to the secret cinema event for Back to the Future, but not just because of that. This film is unbelievable. I believe it's one of the best made films, and I've happily said that, I think, online.
Yeah, my
choice of movies. It's not just a good time travel film. I will always, always watch it if it's on TV. The time travel element is amazing in it. You want to be...
Even the effects.
Like, yeah, it doesn't look dated. It doesn't. Yeah. You know, and what's weird about it now is that when they actually go to the future in the second part for 2015, we're now here.
Yeah.
There was always that thing like 10 years ago.
We've got 10 minutes, I think it is, something like that.
October 21st.
To create hoverboards and flying cars.
And have our shoes done up for us without even looking.
Power laces.
That's it. But for me, that is the ultimate time travel film. I can't leave it out. It's criminal for me.
Its plot is central around time travel. The whole aspect of it. It's a quintessential time travel film as well.
Very much, yeah.
And I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. It's actually my number one as well.
Great.
The first Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
I first watched it as a kid. My dad introduced me to it, and it was just one of the best moments of my life, I think, sitting there watching Marty McFly, one of the coolest guys I'd ever seen at the time. I mean, he goes on stage, he plays guitar, he's in a band, and he time travels.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
And he gets to go in the DeLorean with Einstein and meet Doc. And it's just Doc's
Millie shags his own mum.
Yeah. We've all done that. But, yeah.
I think you're fine. He never got close to that.
Well.
Yeah.
He did in the fan fiction, I write.
That's what's going to happen in a bit when we talk about what the ending would change. Yeah, that, shags his mum.
Then he gets with his own mum.
He's his own dad.
And it's, yeah, and it was filmed in Nuneaton. Yeah, that's my number one choice. I'm glad, Adam, you agree. Again, another one that people argue, which is best. Back to the Future 1, Back to
always,
the Future
always
2.
Always one for me. I like 2. I like the references to 1 in 2.
Yeah.
I like when he goes to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance and sees himself on stage playing guitar.
It's a really clever film, isn't it?
It is.
Great story.
Yeah. It's incredibly
so original.
Clever. Something completely different that wasn't around at the time.
Come on then, Ben. I reckon you're going to pick a film that I haven't seen. I don't know why.
Well,
I've just got a feeling.
You guys are both cinephiles, so you may well have seen this, but I wouldn't be surprised if you hadn't, because it's not a major film. Have you guys seen a film called Primer?
No.
Primer is one of the weirdest goddamn films I have ever seen. It was written and directed by a chap called Shane Carruth, and he basically self-financed this film, and it stars him and some lesser-known actors and friends of his, and he wasn't even going to be in the film, but I think he basically decided that he wouldn't really have to pay himself, and he wrote the words.
But not for narcissistic reasons, then.
Well, potentially. But he basically, this guy, Shane Carruth, he's a former mathematician and engineer. So he's a scientist by trade. And this film tells a tale about how he and a couple of his workmates are scientists. And what they're trying to do is come up with an invention that can reduce the weight of an object. And in doing so, they accidentally stumble across something that can transport things through time. So they create this box that's like a coffin, and they get in it, and then they realise they can appear a few days earlier, and then they start playing the stock market and earning all this money from it. But it's not about that, really. It's not about what they do. It's about the science and the psychology of it. And it's because this guy's an engineer and a mathematician, the science of it is very, very in-depth. Like, some of the language, it's not a film you can have on in the background while you're doing other things. You need to concentrate on this film, or else you will miss everything. You'll be like, okay, what's happened there then? Why are they in the past now? You have to listen to it and take on board all the scientific explanations. Okay. It's a film that doesn't coddle you. It doesn't hold your hand and expect you to get it. You've got to pay attention.
Yeah.
And it's an absolutely amazing, singular piece of work. There is nothing out there like Primer.
At any point, do they emerge from this coffin and end up behind their 12-year-old daughter's bookcase?
No, they don't. In the fifth dimension?
Yes.
No, they don't, thankfully.
Well, that sounds like a bonus. I might watch that.
Yeah. But Primer, I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix, or it certainly was at one point. Go and watch it on Netflix. Buy the Blu-ray. This film is unreal.
I actually, when I was researching time travel films, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, when I was picking Donnie Darko, people classed it as time. You know, some people argue about certain things. Mm-hmm. This one came up on a lot of people's choices.
It's true. You have to research these things, otherwise you end up with Sandman moments.
Exactly. No one wants a Sandman moment. I always worry when I'm recording, like, I don't want it to be me this week. I really don't. Thanks to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. We've had some suggestions come through on your top three. So we've had some new names again. Matthew Andrew with Terminator 2, Back to the Future and Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
So, you know,
totally
Groundhog
Day is
a great choice. Rodrigo Vengas, Primer, Looper,
no,
and Deja Vu.
The concept of Looper is better than the film.
Correct. Yeah. And Deja Vu.
I mean, I remember actually, Ben, before we even did all this, I used to talk to you at work and we were so psyched about Looper.
Yeah.
I think I just met you and you're like, I'm going to the cinema to see Looper tonight. I was so but like, Bruce Willis, this is going to be amazing. And you came in the next day and was like,
it was so disappointing.
I remember, this is a common theme I actually discovered while we were going on about time travel films. The amount of time travel films out there, that the concept is a lot better than the actual film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's quite a difficult, heady concept. It's hard to then translate that into something good.
Yeah.
We've had Alex Smith with Back to the Future Part 2, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and Hot Tub Time Machine.
That is such a daft film, but I really like it.
Yeah, John Cusack, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
And
it's
the
got Daryl from The Office in as well, hasn't it?
It has. The sequel comes out soon. Craig Robinson. Sequel comes out soon. John Cusack's not in it, but he's been replaced by Adam Scott from Parks and Recreation.
Oh, amazing. I'll definitely watch that.
Yeah. That's a proper beer movie, isn't it? Beer and pizza. Steve Jordan with Terminator 2, Back to the Future and Groundhog Day. Paul Dawson with Time Bandits, Donnie Darko and Army of Darkness, so Evil Dead 3. Lois Alexander Netting with Back to the Future, Donnie Darko and 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, great film. They made a TV show of that's coming out in a few weeks.
Mark Walker with Back to the Future, The Terminator and About Time.
A lot of love for Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Daniel Sava with Back to the Future, Terminator and X-Men Days of Future Past.
Very good film.
Gemma Hurst with Groundhog Day, Donnie Darko and Back to the Future, but also said that she would like to justify Source Code because it's actually really good. That's also with Jake
Gyllenhaal. So that, I think that's why I've never watched it, because I wouldn't want to see him in an inferior time travel movie, having been in a brilliant one.
Stu Pickering with Terminator 2, Groundhog Day, Planet of the Apes, obviously the original.
Not the Tim Burton abomination.
No. 12 Monkeys, Time Bandits, Time Machine, and he's put, I travelled through time, choked my grandfather to death with a butterfly, and caused a time allowance, which now gives me a chance to pick more than 3 choices. He's a weirdo.
Clearly.
Also, he said he's forgot about the film About Time, which I've not seen, but it was a film that made him cry.
I don't even know what that one is, About Time.
Features Richard Curtis, so About Time.
We wouldn't feature him, he's a writer and a director.
Okay, well, he's probably got that wrong. Chris Jones has put Butterfly Effect, the first one.
Yeah.
The Jacket.
No.
No, it's
not Butterfly Effect. It's terrible.
Hold that thought, we'll come to that later.
The Jacket.
No.
No, not seen it. Anyone seen it? And again, Back to the Future.
I've seen the coat and the trousers, but I've not seen the jacket.
Brilliant. Amy Hatton with Donnie Darko, Bill and Ted, Groundhog Day. Mark Holloway has done a bit of a Sandman here. You said Back to the Future 2, Bill and Ted, and Interstellar.
Yikes.
You are having a laugh. Absolute
massive
joker.
Massive Sandman moment.
Ellie Comparis with Safety Not Guaranteed, Donnie Darko, and Terminator. And finally, Nick Eversfield with, all he wants to say is Safety Not Guaranteed just because of Aubrey Plaza. That's it.
Aubrey.
Yeah, it's Aubrey. Yeah, he said Aubrey about 3 times now, but
sorry.
That's fine.
That's my usual
mistake. The whole Christopher Waltz thing again.
Oh, Christopher Waltz.
So, it's my turn to set next week's topic.
What have we got for us, Mark?
Well, as we know, the award ceremonies are happening at the moment, so a lot of people are talking about best actors, best supporting actors, best actresses in the Golden Globes and the Oscars. So this one's going to require probably the most support out of all of the kind of assessments we've set each other, the tasks. So for me, I want you to each come back with 3 performances in the film, so you name the actor in the film, where the supporting actor, in your opinion, has completely outshone the main leading actor in that film.
Nice. Amazing. I like that. That's a really good idea.
I can think of 2 in Django Unchained.
Yeah? Waltz.
Everybody
DiCaprio.
Always mentions Christopher Waltz for that reason.
Yeah.
But but that's going to take a bit more thought. Because
that does. That's brilliant. That's a great topic.
That is a great topic. I'm up for that.
So next week, guys, best supporting actor that shattered over the main actor.
Yeah. I'll probably word it differently when I put it on the website, skipsthen.co.uk, but yeah.
What's that site?
Skipsthen.co.uk.
That's a really good site. I'll tell you what now. This is just a quick one. No, I'm being serious. If I wasn't in the podcast and I was an outsider, go on that site because there's amazing articles on there. And it's not just like, oh, next week there's a new article. Every single day, that's 7 days
and
a week.
It's not just film and TV either. There's stuff for gamers on there.
Yep, loads of stuff for gamers.
So Adam's a massive gamer and he's helping all the other big gamers in the world with lots of gamer input. So yeah, skiptheend.co.uk.
Been to see the new true life crime drama Foxcatcher, starring Steve Carell, Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo. The film tells the story of the events that occurred at Foxcatcher Farm involving billionaire heir John DuPont and Olympic wrestlers Mark and David Schultz. Mark, do you want to lead us off?
Yep.
Thoughts?
Going into this film, all I had read, because it's been out in America I think a lot longer, I think a couple of months, this is the best film of the year. Mesmerising performance. Steve Carell at his best. Mm-hmm. You will never see a finest biopic film featuring the amazing Channing Tatum. He will change your ways of thinking of acting. And I came out like, literally like, that was pretty boring. You know.
You just said you watched a film about wrestling and came out.
Yeah, well, yeah. We'll get into it as we always do, talk about the acting, the performances. I was very underwhelmed.
Yeah.
It was definitely not that film that I went in to see that they told me it was a 5 out of 5, you know, Empire 5 out of 5. You know, it was not. It was alright.
Yeah. I second that motion. I was bored, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was decent enough. I thought the acting was okay, which we'll come to in a moment. But the story was boring. And the thing is, because I knew the outcome, massive spoiler alert here, John DuPont goes mental and kills Mark Schultz, David Schultz. So that's Steve Carell kills Mark Ruffalo. We knew that was coming because it's a true story. So watching the film, your experience is coloured by that because you know what's coming. So all you're hoping for is a good build-up. And the build-up just wasn't there. It was just 2 hours of events that didn't seem to flow from one to another. Like, there's a point where Mark Schultz, Channing Tatum's character, comes to wrestle at John DuPont's sort of compound, you know, his big mansion, where DuPont set up a wrestling academy. And they're best friends, they're doing coke together and cutting each other's hair. They're, you know, absolute bezzies. And then Steve Carell slaps Channing Tatum, and then they're mortal enemies.
Yeah.
And then that leads to Carell going a bit weird and killing Mark Ruffalo.
He slaps him, and all of a sudden Mark Schultz loses every bit of confidence he's ever had.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah. And then they can't even look at each other after this. And now I've actually gone and read Mark Schultz's autobiography after this, and I've read more about that. In the film, all it portrays is that Mark comes and works at John DuPont, or starts to wrestle at John DuPont's academy at Foxcatcher Farms to train for the World Championships, then eventually the Olympics. That's not the truth. The truth of it is, John DuPont hired Mark Schultz to come and run a wrestling division at a local college that DuPont was giving a lot of money to. And basically, DuPont kept making Schultz promises about how he was going to bring in big coaches, he was going to get their own wrestling arena that they could, you know, practice in, he was going to give them all these facilities and all this money, and it never happened. He kept undermining him and bringing people in over him. And you read the book and you understand completely why Mark Schultz and John DuPont would become mortal enemies. Whereas in the film, Steve Carell slaps Channing Tatum once, and then they're mortal enemies.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense. If you didn't know the backstory, if you hadn't gone and read Mark Schultz's autobiography as I had, you'd be massively underwhelmed by that.
Well, that's it. I hadn't, and I was there going, what's he done? Did he slap him and whisper in his ear that he had murdered his parents or something? Because it was a bit like, that what? You best. It was a bit weird. He came out, and he was sitting there on his little porch, and he was kind of sitting there looking into his field, and kind of, this is Steve Carell's character, and he comes out and kind of strokes him on the shoulder, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it's a bit, you look like these are a bit more than friends, and I think they're just in their pants. And it's a bit weird, and like you say, he's cutting his hair, and he's kind of like touching him on his arm. And you just think this is a bit of a weird relationship, and they're all doing coke, like you said. And I think they've probably had a bit more of a intimate relationship there that we didn't see that went on in that house.
Well, let's hope Mark Schultz isn't listening to this, because he has kicked off royally at people accusing him of having any kind of homosexual relationship.
But you'd seen the change in the way they were together, and it was, like he kept saying, like, you're a father to me, but it was a bit more than that. It was very weird the way he's walking around, literally just his pants.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there thinking, this is a bit weird. And then, like you said, the next scene I see, he hates him, he won't look at him, he won't train in the same room, and then suddenly his brother's the best mate of the... I don't know. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
it was just a
list of events that happened with no connection between them, no reason for one thing leading to another. It was just this, then that, then this, then that, and then it ended.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Adam. You have your 2 cents worth.
Well, for what this film was sold as to me, it was a true-to-life biopic, true crime drama.
Yep.
I saw none of that. I have never been more bored in my life than watching this film. You guys said it was fine. To me, it wasn't. I was literally sitting there, and for a film like this, and the way... Because I knew the outcome as well. I knew that John DuPont killed David Schultz.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there waiting for all of these little tense moments to happen. Like the trailer showed me. The trailer showed me bits where John DuPont walks into the wrestling academy with a gun in his hand. It's like, what's going to happen here? That scene's quite early on in the film. He just walks in, he's holding his gun, he's been shooting outside. Explained away quite nicely. Done.
Yeah.
Never mind, don't worry about it. So the trailer sells it as something that it isn't. It's dreadful.
Yeah, tell us what you really think.
The only saving grace for me, and we'll talk about this later, is Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, he's very good. But yeah, let's come to the acting later. Let's keep rinsing the film because I'm enjoying this. Because you're right, it's not great. And again, reading Schultz's book, Mark Schultz's book, there are a lot of things, that incidents that occur. And again, reading the book, you're only reading one person's side of the argument. I can only assume that Mark Schultz is telling the truth.
You are from Mark Schultz's book, but other wrestlers who did wrestle at Foxcatcher Farms have come out and said similar things. They've said that this guy was a bit, you know, eccentric, and he said he got a bit paranoid, and he did start carrying a gun everywhere with him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing that they don't show in the film. They don't show that after he kills David Schultz, he's then involved in a 48-hour standoff with the police. He sort of puts himself into his mansion, refuses to come out. The police are negotiating with him. They're putting through the standard sort of negotiation calls. And there's a bit where he's just gone mental. He thinks that he's Jesus. He's saying that he's Jesus. And there's another time where he says he's the Dalai Lama. They don't show any of that in the film. That shit's really interesting to show that this guy was a fucking Fruit Loop. Yep. And they don't bother to show it in the film.
That would actually make a bit more sense why he suddenly flips. Yeah. Why he's like he is. But all we see is this guy that just changed the way he felt.
Yeah.
No reason for it.
He was just a bit of a weird fella, and then all of a sudden started murdering people.
With a big nose. It's one of those films, right, that comes out. Now, have you guys seen The Wrestler?
Brilliant film.
Yeah, really good film. Really good acting, which, you know, the acting in this film is good. But it's one of those films that, for me, I probably won't go back and watch. So I would probably not want to go back and watch The Wrestler. So watch, for me, watch it once, enjoy it, put it to bed.
Okay.
For the Foxcatcher, now I've seen it, I'll never want to go back and see it. And there's always these films that come out every few years, and the Academy love them. They bloody love them, they do. But they do. And because it's a life story, and they've got these actors like Channing, who does a lot of different films. He's always the 22 Jump Street and all these things. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at the serious acting. They love it. They actually really bloody love it. And the problem is with this, is I'm not going to be sold on that. I'm not going to have this forced on me that it's a great film.
Yeah.
Because I feel cheated out of my entrance money for this cinema ticket, and I'm annoyed. And sometimes I will sit there and I think, well, you know, like Sin City, it was still entertaining. Because if you go and see Sin City 2 and expect an Oscar-winning film, you're an idiot. You know, it is a comic book.
This comes back to the fact that we rate things based on our expectations of them.
Yeah, and I went in there with a lot higher expectations, and I blame the media, I blame everyone out there that's forced this on us and telling us it's a good film because it's lies.
Yeah.
And I feel cheated.
Yeah, and I agree. And you're right, the media does do that, but that is the curse of this time of year. When you get to Oscars time of year, all your prestige picks come out, sort of December, January time, and you're told that these are great, these are important films, these matter, and you go into the cinema with those expectations, and then you go, oh, well, actually, that was just another film that wasn't great.
Because you do, you sit there and think, why would a studio schedule a film like this to come out at a time where they're going to be up against things like Whiplash, which we'll be reviewing on the next episode, Inherent Vice coming up, we've got American Sniper coming up as well.
On the blog, we'll do a review of that for the blog, yeah.
So you sit there and you think, the studio must have a lot of faith in this film. And these are people, these studio execs have probably seen this film, and they must be sitting there thinking, oh, this is great, this is brilliant. Fire them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely disgusting that this film will be in the same category alongside The Imitation Game.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. This will be up there for the best picture, probably the same. Then they're completely different. One's a decent film, one's a pile of shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not fair. It's not right. You know, this will be against, we reviewed on the last episode, if you want to go back and listen, Birdman. That's a standout, brilliant film that's been thought about with good acting, and it's a good. It's a better than this.
Yes, absolutely.
And you'll watch it again.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know.
You will.
Maybe.
You will. It's the rewatch next week. But you know, it's. Let's get into the acting.
Well, no. Hold on. Oh, I want to ask you something before we do. Right. Let me ask you a question. From the start to the end of the film, how much time do you think is supposed to have passed? From the time that Channing Tatum's character turns up at Foxcatcher.
I read about this because Mark Schultz and David Schultz were apparently allegedly never actually at Foxcatcher at the same time. Or their time overlapped some point during the 90s.
Yeah, but that's dramatic license. They might have been there
the
together,
way I
might not. But how many years do you think
I would say from, because I'm an idiot, so ask the doofus. I would say from watching that film, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, what would you have thought, Adam?
Judging from the film, because you see the World Championship at the Olympics, you'd say 4.
Yeah.
At least.
It's 9.
What?
Yeah. Channing Tatum.
I'll be honest, it felt like 9 years.
Watching the film.
His nose grew for 9 years.
Tatum's character turned up there in 1987, just before the World Championships of that year, and then David Schultz, Mark Ruffalo's character, was killed in 1996. So it's supposed to cover 9 years' time. But at any point did you feel the passage of, other than your life slipping away watching this film, in the film, the passage of time just wasn't represented at all. Well, you had no idea. Like, and the majority of the movie takes place within about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But then when Channing Tatum's character leaves Foxcatcher, between that point, him leaving, and David Schultz, Mark Ruffalo being killed, that's about 4 or 5 years. But it's represented in one scene.
Yeah.
And at no point does it tell you that time has moved on. I think they might have put a little bit of grey hair in Steve Carell's hair.
I didn't even notice they did. Mm. I honestly don't, I don't think they did.
I don't think they did. I think they they cut the time down. I think they took artistic license or whatever. And
yeah.
Because, as I said earlier, apparently Mark and David Shooks never really overlapped. Mm. I think there was only a short bit of overlap of their time with Fort Sketcher Farms. But, yeah, he's, I think David Shooks was supposed to have died in 96.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Olympics we see for about 2 minutes. This is this event they've been talking about throughout the entire film. He needs to be ready for the Olympics. We need an Olympic gold. Done. Gone. 2 minutes later. We're back home. Yeah. He's shooting Dave Schultz. I don't understand why I've watched this film.
Yeah, because that's it. Because it was the 88 Seoul Olympics when Tatum, when Schultz fails, leaves Foxcatcher, and the next scene, David Schultz is being killed. So if it's the 88 Olympics and he dies in 96... That's 8 years that have passed without any demonstration of that on screen. You would only know it if you'd gone and read a bloody book like I did. It's poor. It's poor. And Bennett Miller, a guy who directed things like Moneyball, this is a guy who knows what he's doing, and this is a letdown.
It's quite remarkable that he did Moneyball as well, because that is a really, really well-made movie that's interesting, that features a sport, that has a lot of good performances, but that was done correctly, and I don't know how you go from that to making it so wrong. You should progress, not forget what you've done and be turred.
And did I think Bennett Miller might have done Capote as well, if memory serves. I could be
wrong.
He did. Oh, he did, okay. And that's my worry with this film. Is the assumption, is the critical reception to this, that this film is great, it's amazing, it deserves Oscars, is it purely because Bennett Miller directed it?
Yeah.
Are we in one of those eras now where just because this person who has done other good things is involved...
Christopher Nolan.
People would just say, this is great as well. It's not. Yeah. It's not. Open your eyes. It's rubbish.
If you're listening to this and you don't agree... Please go on Twitter at STTE Podcast and tell us what we've missed. Facebook, you know, .com/skiptheempodcast, because we like the fact that, you know, you might not agree, because Empire have told you this is the best film out. Total Film have told you this is the best performance, best film of 2015. So tell us, you know, what are we missing? Because I believe that us three have nailed it here. We're all on the same page and we're very let down.
Yeah.
But we can't sit here and slag it all off, because... Let's come to the performances. The acting
is good. Let's talk about the acting. And before we do this, bearing in mind this is our time travel episode, we're going to use a bit of time travel here. This episode is going out on a Sunday. So you guys that are listening to it, you will have already experienced the Oscar nominations, because they come out on the Thursday before the Sunday that you're listening to it. However, we're recording this on a Tuesday before the Thursday. So we have no idea if any of these guys have been nominated for Oscars or not. But you guys listening to this will know. So bear that in mind when we're talking about this. We don't know. They could have all been nominated for all we know.
That's it.
Let's start at the top. Steve Carell, what do we think?
I think, to be fair, he did a very good job, because he's always Michael Scott to me. I've watched 9 seasons and for 8 of them he is Michael Scott. But fair play to him. He nailed the role of Mr. Burns perfectly.
He did. He was an excellent Mr. Burns.
He was perfect. Yeah. You know, and let's be honest about it, Channing Tatum was a good Smithers. It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. So it was a Simpsons movie. Brilliant.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
But joking aside, Steve Carell, he wasn't the funny guy. Even when he's not Steve Carell, you know, when he's not Michael Scott and he goes into other films, we have seen him in... is it Love, Sex and Other... What's the one that he's with Emma Stone and stuff? He's with Ryan Gosling.
Oh, I know the one you mean. Crazy, Sexy...
Crazy, Stupid Love.
Crazy, Stupid Love. He is still quite Michael Scott, and he's good, and he's funny, and you like him in that. He's with, what's that film with Tina Fey as well he's with?
Date Night.
He's funny, Carell. You know. I like him. But stick to that, you know, because you've done a serious role. You've done it well. Hats off to you, and you've come across as this good performance. But I was just towards... I'll be honest... I wasn't engaged in him, and I switched off. And
he's done okay for me. He's being tapped around for a Best Actor nomination, and for me, I've seen better people this year that won't be nominated.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck in Gone Girl.
For me,
puts in a better performance.
I bet now he's been nominated, Ben Affleck, but yeah.
But it's just one of those things where people attack him as one of the, you know, a lock.
For
Best Actor, and that's just because of people's expectations of him for me. Mm-hmm. People don't expect him to put in a performance of a serious nature.
Yeah.
He's done that. They've all gone, well done, Steve.
Yeah.
It's like they're patronising him. Well done, lad. Go on, stroke your head.
You didn't say that's what she said. You did really well.
Yeah.
You know.
See, I'm sort of torn on Carell's performance. On one hand, within minutes, I had forgotten that he was Michael Scott. I'd forgotten that it was Steve Carell. I thought it was a singular performance. It was what it was, and I thought it was good. However, after watching the film, I then went on YouTube and looked up interviews with John DuPont to see how true to life it was. And John DuPont, if you go and you can find these on YouTube, just, you know, YouTube his name, he was a normal guy. By all accounts, he was weird in the head, but the way he spoke and the way he moved, the way he acted, he was a normal guy.
So
whereas Steve Carell's characterisation of him was of this Mr. Burns-esque weirdo.
Yeah.
And what I think they've done, which I think is foolish, is I mentioned earlier, reading Mark Schultz's book, there were a lot of other crazy things that John DuPont did in real life that they didn't put in the film. And I think they've taken a shortcut. What they've done in the film, instead of saying, I tell you what, let's demonstrate the things that he did that were crazy, let's just make him look weird.
Yeah.
So they've made Carell play, or Carell has chosen to play him as an absolute freaking weirdo, whereas he's not, he wasn't a weirdo, he seemed like a normal dude.
Yeah.
He just did weird shit. They've gone the wrong way with it in the film, and I think that's, if it was an intentional choice by Bennett Miller and the writers, Emax Fry and Dan Futterman, if they intended the performance to go that way, they've let Steve Carell down. They should have allowed him to play it properly.
Yeah.
Because John DuPont wasn't as weird as Carell made him to be in the film. He was in the head, but they tried
to make him out like
action.
A bit like a serial killer. Like, it reminded me, like, in Fargo, what's his character's name? Come on, Billy Bob Thornton. That dark, weird, sinister guy. And he's nothing like that. Mm. That's who he reminds me of. Like, you know, that's the sort of characteristics he had. And like you said, I've not read the book afterwards, but if he isn't like that, why try and do that? Just let him be a normal guy that then pulls out a gun at the end.
Show the mental bits.
As I say, he was mental. He did loads of crazy shit. Like you mentioned, Adam, there's a scene where he comes in with brandishing a gun. There were scenes in the book, you read about him doing that multiple times. He was like a reservist for the police because he was a billionaire, he used to give the police lots of money to equip them. So they gave him basically an honorary badge. So he thought he was a cop. So sometimes he'd turn up to wrestling practice in a full cop's outfit, brandishing, you know, assault rifles and shit, and scare the living death out of people.
Oi, big boss man, go home.
Again, they didn't put that in the film.
Yeah.
Don't make him look like a, you know, bizarre sort of half-pedo Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
Put the weird shit that he actually did in the film.
I don't think they knew which character to focus on for the film. I think, as bad as it is, obviously, he is the villain of the piece, but if they'd done a film focusing mainly on him, they could have detailed all that.
Yeah.
But they chose Mark Schultz instead to be the focal point of the film.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. It was no offence to Mark Schultz, Olympic gold medal wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Fair play to you, but your life was boring.
Yeah,
I agree. That said, I actually thought Channing Tatum was my favourite person in the film. I thought Tatum was very, very good with what he did.
I thought he was good, but then I thought that was down to my estimation of him.
Lowered expectations. Yeah.
I, you know, from what I've seen him, I've not really seen an outstanding performance from him. So to see him in a serious role was very interesting, and he was good.
Yeah. See, I used to have very lowered expectations because he used to just be one of those guys who was in god awful romantic films, you know, take his shirt off and whatnot.
Hey, Step Up's a masterpiece.
Yeah. And then he did.
And Mark's favourite film is Magic Mike 3D.
Yeah.
It has to be 3D.
Yeah.
You need those groins gyrating in 3D. I saw him in 21 Jump Street, and I think it was the first comedy he'd ever done, and he was a revelation. He's hilarious in that film. He made Jonah Hill look like the pile of shit that he is. And so to see him in a serious film acting his arse off, again, I was really impressed with the guy. I think the guy's got oodles of talent. People just put him in crap films for a long part of his career because he's just a handsome, buff guy.
We'll be talking about him like Matthew McConaughey.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. And do you know what? In 22 Jump Street as well, he comes back and nails a great performance. Yeah, it's good.
I really like
him. I watched 22 Jump Street recently after this, and I preferred it.
Should we just talk about
it? Let's just talk about
it.
And Channing Tatum has been cast as Gambit in upcoming X-Men films.
You see,
and
I think you'll nail that.
And 23 Jump Street.
It's still going about fucking Jump Street.
28 Jump Street.
It's always keep coming back.
So I thought Tatum was very good. Ruffalo, you mentioned, Adam. Ruffalo kills it. He knocks it out of the park every time.
Yeah.
Because he's just
I love Mark Ruffalo. I thought he was.
Do you know what? He was
the best
great
thing about the whole thing for me was Mark Ruffalo.
He was good. Very strong performance. I couldn't fault him. Again, he doesn't do really comedy roles, does he? He's doing quite serious roles recently and it was good.
He was the guy for me who, much like Steve Carell and Channing Tatum, I guess, wasn't given a lot to work with,
mm-hmm.
but did a lot more than everyone else with it.
Which is often the case with him. He's a guy who can do that. The thing that I thought was very weird is that Sienna Miller played Nancy Schultz, David's wife. Well, this is it. She's in, I think, maybe 3-4 scenes, and she has maybe 2-3 lines.
Yeah.
And it's like, Sienna Miller, she might not be the greatest actress in the world, but she's pretty good, she's talented, and she's got name value. People know who she is. Why hire Sienna Miller to be in 3 or 4 scenes and have 2 or 3 lines?
Fair point.
Where's the logic in that? Yeah.
To save that money, and buy a script.
Yeah, right, just spend the time, write that script. Don't worry about Sienna Miller.
Oh, okay then.
So scores
on the doors.
I'll kick this off.
Go on.
I always think afterwards, oh, I think I rated that too high. Like, last week, we rated, which you can listen to, Birdman, I gave it a 9. I thought about it afterwards.
Did you?
Yeah.
Christ.
And I think I gave it too high. This one, I'm sure I'm not going to think I've been too high. I'm going to go 6.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've looked at the other films and how it went in, the expectations. Okay. It would be cruel to give this the same rating as Sharknado 2. But 6 for me, because I went in with quite a lot of high expectations. So yeah. I have to do the overall. It's not like, this isn't a 6 out of 10 film, but the way I went in and what I was expecting, I never got.
Well, I came into this recording expecting to say 6 as well. But the conversation we've had has made me realise how little I liked it. So I'm saying 5. It's 5 out of 10 for me.
I'm just trying to remember what I gave Sin City.
I think you gave it 3.
Yeah.
Why don't you visit
skip10.co.uk? It's higher than a 3. There was a lot I didn't like about this film.
Mm.
I'm going to give it 5 just for Mark Ruffalo.
Wow. So with our skip the end mouse, you two get your 5.
High five.
Nice. Hey. It's not a high five. A few facts I found out about this film afterwards I always like to bring to the table. So, quick one you might want to know. So, I think you did mention earlier, one of the wrestlers that David actually taught was Kurt Angle.
Yep.
So, any wrestling fans out there. And he was actually...
Who appeared in Sharknado 2.
Yeah.
And he did. It's all connected!
He was part of the Fox Catcher team during the movie's events, and he even trained with them to the 1996 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's true, but sounds
true. Yeah, I believe it is. They should have got Kurt in for a cameo.
Yeah. They can't afford probably a bit, Sharknado 2.
It's probably a bit too painful.
Yeah. In the, that spoilers here, but in the mirror bashing scene, Channing Tatum actually broke the mirror, which was not meant to happen in the script, but they kept it in because it added that intensity.
See, I don't think that's true. Because I saw that scene where, did he punch it or headbutt
it?
He headbutts it because he has all the glass in his head.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
He headbutts this mirror, and I remember reading prior to that that he'd done that on the fly and it wasn't in the script. But then I read Mark Schultz's book, and Mark Schultz tells that story about him headbutting the mirror. So I'm thinking, well, I think it probably was in the script then.
Okay.
Obviously, they spent 6 months actually training to be wrestlers in this film, so Mark Ruffalo and Channing Tatum spent a lot of time. During one scene, the actual physical take, Channing, you probably remember saying, slap the hell out of me and get this done. So he's actually slapping him across the face, and you actually see his face, don't you, Channing Tatum's all red. The rumour is that he actually popped the eardrum of him. And I do remember actually watching that scene, thinking, fair play, look at the red it's left on his face. That was quite good.
I like that was like the first scene.
Yeah.
The two brothers
that's
wrestling.
That's the best bit.
It was the
best
bit. It was a good scene.
You left a good
like
red
that.
Print on him.
Yeah.
Steve Carell's nose that we knew wasn't real took 2 hours a day to put on.
Well, not worth it.
Should have been a script.
Shouldn't have
script.
Yeah, and obviously the skin tone and everything for his aging process took that long as well. But I'll be honest with you, it looked like he'd aged only 2 hours. Like you said, there was nothing, no grey hair, no more wrinkly skin. Dreadful.
Shit.
And finally, Steve Carell and Channing Tatum actually ad-libbed their whole dialogue scene in the helicopter. Remember that famous scene? That we're all going to remember. We both forgot.
No, it's the bit where he's saying, I'm an ornithologist, philanthropist, blah, 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 over and over again. That was annoying.
Last little thing as well. It's the one of the last... Yeah, I think it's the first time I've been to the cinema where probably by about 2 hours in, I was actually getting my phone out. Not just to text, just to be like, come on, how long's left? Because that was one that did feel like a long film.
It's boring as hell. Do you know what? I'm glad you brought those facts to the table.
Yeah.
Because you come to skip to the end, you get a good review, and you might just learn something. So, cheers.
Thanks, guys. So,
Foxcatcher didn't get a good review.
No, Foxcatcher, 5 out of 10. We had a question come through last week from Tom via Facebook, which is facebook.com/skipthempodcast. Now, we took this question away because we felt it needed a bit more thought, and his question was, can you think of a film that you'd like to go back and either change the ending or have a completely different, something that you'd like to change about it, or what could make it a completely different film? Bit of a random question, but like always, we want to come back and give you what you've asked for. So, Adam, what did you come up with?
This is a film that me and Ben have spoke about recently, actually, Green Lantern.
Yeah.
The film for Green Lantern.
Are you going to say that you want to change all of it? Because it was all rubbish.
It was generally very poor. Yeah. The choice of enemy I found terrible, with parallax and things like that. Now, what could have, I guess, rescued it at the end for me was if, after Parallax had been defeated, we had then seen a fight between Sinestro and Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
Because we see in the end credits Sinestro picks up the yellow ring and stuff like that, but that was irrelevant. That was basically him gambling on the fact they were getting a sequel when they weren't. So if we'd just seen Sinestro towards the end of it, we'd seen a fight between Sinestro and Lantern, and Sinestro fly off to form the Sinestro Corps.
Yeah.
That would have changed the entire film. It would have left on a high, you'd have got a great ending out of it, and most people probably would have forgotten how abysmal the hour or so before it was.
Yeah, I agree entirely. You know my thoughts on that film. I happen to think that Ryan Reynolds was a good Hal Jordan. I think that Mark Strong was a brilliant Sinestro. Yeah. And it's a shame that neither of those guys are going to continue to be in the DC Universe because they were poorly served by a shit film.
They generally were. The script was overall terrible.
Yeah.
And that to me is the key thing I've changed there. The script. No.
Yeah, well, yeah, the whole bloody thing.
But towards the end, if we'd just seen 20 minutes of a Sinestro versus Hal Jordan's Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Going one-on-one, because Sinestro was obviously the man that trained him in the film. And if they'd just shown us something like that,
yeah,
we could have at least salvaged something from it.
Yeah, yeah. We'd have had something to look forward to. Yeah. Another one, yeah.
So and really, I think it would have got a second film. Yeah. If Sinestro flew in off and in the end credits he was following the Sinestro Corps,
yep.
I think that would have got a second film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great choice. I'm going to go with my choice, but I just want to say the little things that would take 10 seconds. If I had the choice, I would have chopped out the alien scene at the end of Prometheus.
Yeah.
I hate that, but that's not worth talking about. What I would change as well is I've read, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but I've read what the original ending was going to be for I Am Legend.
Yeah,
I read about that as well.
Yeah.
I nearly picked this as my choice.
Yeah, and I was quite surprised that they didn't go with that. So my choice would be, I think it might be available on a DVD. I don't know if it is.
Yeah.
Cool. Go with that ending.
Well, tell them what the actual ending is, and then tell them what the alternate one is.
The ending that they actually... Which one? Because one of them was released on a director's cut.
The general ending to the film...
I
Am Legend is that Will Smith's character... He's captured one of these zombies, and he's experimenting on them, trying to find... Sorry, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
What are they?
Vampires.
Correct.
Then. Thank you. Thank you. So, in...
Way of the Dragon.
So, in... Come on, in.
So in I Am Legend,
yeah,
this film about vampires.
Correct.
Will Smith's character, named...
Robert Neville.
Thank you.
He's got one of them captured and he's doing experiments on him, isn't he, to try and find a cure for the vampirism.
Yeah.
Right. Perfect. And then a load of the vampires turn up, he then sets off a bomb and kills them all.
Yeah.
That's the story ending to the film. The alternate ending they shot... is that it turns out that they've been dropping hints throughout the film that these vampires aren't mindless zombie-esque characters. They're intelligent beings. And the reason why they've broken into his house or wherever it is at the end is to rescue their friend who he's captured.
Called, yeah.
And that's the whole reason why the film is called I Am Legend, because he is the legend to them. He is this vampire killer that's killing their kind. He's the bad guy. That's why the book originally was called I Am Legend. And they just threw it out the window and went, he blows them up.
Yeah, it should have just made the film like the book, to be honest.
Did they ever release it with it actually put in, or was it only an extra? It seems weird that they filmed all that and did all the budget
to
do it.
I'm pretty sure they filmed it and it was just a DVD extra, but I could be
wrong.
That's ridiculous. I think they filmed it originally, but then studio interference, as is always the case, the studio went, not good enough, don't like it.
He actually gives the woman back, doesn't he? And then he goes off to find the surviving humans himself with them and hands over the cure personally.
I've only seen that film once, and I remember sitting there going, this is annoying me, and it's very emotional when the dog scene, it's very sad, but...
don't care.
I want to go and revisit that film, because I remember hating it, but when you just talked about that, I'm going to watch that ending, because it's on part of the DVD.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I know. I did read it,
I was actually a fan of this film, I imagine. I enjoyed it, and then I read the book, and now I hate it.
Yeah, same as a lot of my friends.
I can honestly recommend to anyone out there who's seen the film and hasn't read the book, read the book, because the book will blow your tits off.
Yeah. And if you like books...
That's on the back as well.
If you like books, amazing. You can read about...
blow your tits off, skip to the end.
If you like books, you can read about our favourite books as well online on skiptheend.co.uk.
Where's that?
skip to the end.co.uk.
Who knows it? My choice, I also have gone for an alternate ending, and it's a film we spoke about earlier that I told you to put a pin in, and that's The Butterfly Effect. Yeah. Now, I rather like this film. I know people think it's shit, but I think it's a good, fun film. And I think it's the best thing Ashton Kutcher's ever done. Even better than... What's that shit thing he's in? Two Men and a Baby or something? Two pints of lager and a packet of crisps. So what's he in?
Two and a half.
That's the one.
He's done better than that, mate. He got Mila Kunis pregnant. That's the best thing he's done.
Best thing he's been in. Yeah.
Yes!
Nice.
Degrading.
Yeah. Sorry.
Shame.
Sorry. I quite like this film. And at the end of the film, because he keeps going back in time, he keeps trying to affect the past to create a better future, a better present, and he keeps buggering it up. And it dawns on him towards the end of the film, in the cinematic version, that every time he goes back, he makes it worse. So what he does is he decides to go all the way back to when he first met his girlfriend. I think it's Amy Smart, played by Amy Smart as an adult. Go back to when he first met her and arrange it so he never meets her, so he never makes her life bad, he never makes his life bad. And that's the end of the film. And it's like, ugh, boring. The original end of the film that was shot and wasn't used, but again, I think you can find it on the DVD, is that he takes the nuclear option to make sure none of these bad things ever happen. He goes back to when he's in the womb and strangles himself with his umbilical cord.
That is insane.
That's a brilliant ending.
Yeah.
Rather than just choosing not to meet this girl when you're 8 years old, he goes back to the womb and strangles himself with his umbilical cord. That's they should have kept that in.
As if they're going to, but that would have been cool.
It wouldn't, to be fair, it wouldn't have changed the outcome per se. The ending, it would have effectively been the same. It was just a better ending.
Cool.
Should have kept it.
I've never seen The Butterfly Effect.
Get involved. It's all right.
It's a trilogy, isn't it?
Get involved. It's all right.
Yes. That's
yeah. We should be used on every DVD cover. I'm telling you now.
On the back of Butterfly Effect. Get involved. It's all right.
Brilliant.
High praise they've never received.
Get Mila Kunis to get a tattoo on her back. The best thing Ashton Kutcher's been in. But yeah. We hope that answered your question nicely, Tom. And keep the questions coming. On that note, let's do list of questions.
Yeah.
Everyone's favourite bit. So we've had some come through from Twitter, at STTE Podcast. Please follow us on there. We've had loads of new followers, and we are updating that throughout the day, every day. So come and say hello. First one from 2FanIQ. I is actually a 1, so I don't know how you pronounce that, but 2Fan1Q. To all of us, can you name the best, and you can have a couple of choices, best TV shows you've watched over the last 5 years?
TV shows?
I know
you've
lost, but some of your best favourite
TV. It's a movies
TV.
Podcast, so I'm not.
I know, but let him have
I'm
it.
I'm only joking. Favourite TV shows over the last few years?
Well, Breaking Bad's got to be in there.
Breaking Bad's the greatest show of all time.
Yeah.
I won't stand for anyone who argues me, they'll get a punch in the face. Mad Men is a work of art. The final season of Mad Men starts, I think, in April, the last
Flash
seven
and
episodes.
Arrow for me as well.
Flash and Arrow are good fun.
I'm going to go with True Detective, because that
True
was really
Detective.
Good.
Yeah. Fargo's unreal.
And
I need to get involved on Fargo.
Yeah, really good show. Comedy-wise, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is an absolutely brilliant show.
And I've recently done an article on why you should be watching Parks and Recreation as well.
And I've also just done a one why you should be watching Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so go and check that out at skiptotheend.co.uk.
And on that, I actually went and visited that website just to check everything, and I saw that Ben did an article on Workaholics. I've just finished series 1 from his article, and I'll be honest, it's very, very funny.
It's hilarious, Workaholics.
So we hope that answers your question. We've got at MovieGeek74, but the E... has got, so the geek has got 3 E's.
Geek.
Is there any movie you would actually like to be remade? Doesn't mean it's got to be a shit film. Supposed, like they did with RoboCop, it was terrible, but you know.
So on point of principle, no. I don't like remakes, in essence.
I kind of previously mentioned I Am Legend, but make it like the book.
Yeah. So you could remake the whole film, even though it's only been out like 10 years.
Foxcatcher, make it not shit.
Make it the way we've described it in the review, so actually have it as John LaPont going insane instead of just making him look crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe Evil Dead. I'd like to see that remade.
The TV show's coming up, isn't it? Starring
Bruce
Campbell.
They remade the film Evil Dead about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was never anything to do with Evil Dead. That was as you were saying, abortion.
But the show that they're doing, the TV show, is going to star Bruce Campbell as Ash, isn't it? So that's going to
be... that could be good. No, there's nothing really.
No, don't like him.
Shouldn't have to.
Shame.
At Suzie Lovers, S-U-Z-Z-I-E. See, we're not... This is fine. We will always answer your questions, but we are a movies and TV podcast.
Mostly we're not movies. Even a TV podcast.
No, we'll answer... We'll bend it to that. A bit different. What song would you listen to on repeat for a whole day?
See, I get really hung up. Like, if I get a new record, if a new song comes out, yeah. I will do that. I will literally go mad on it. Faith No More are one of the greatest bands in the history of all time. One of my favourites, of course. And they've got a new record coming out this year, which is going to be unreal. Their first record for something like 20 years, 19 years. And they've released one song from it so far called Motherfucker. And it is brilliant.
It cheapens
it. But that song, Motherfucker, rules. And I did, when I first got a download of that, listen to it all day, non-stop, on repeat, over and over and over again. Brilliant song. Brilliant band.
One of two.
Fallout Boy, here we go.
No, it's both Biffy Clyro songs. Liberate the Illiterate.
Tune.
Or All the Way Down, Prologue, Chapter 1.
Cool.
Oh, that's a pretentious title, isn't it?
It's Biffy
Clyro. All the Way Down, Prologue, Chapter 1. Come on, lad, you're from fucking Scotland. Come on, that pretentious.
Next week,
you're
eating
deep fried Mars bars.
I'll go with Ruben. The song is Moving to Blackwater. I've never got bored of it. It's about 12 years old and it's an absolute masterpiece.
Well, that's a question, but we are a movies podcast.
Yeah.
No, I don't mind that though, because our website, we talk about music and TV and comics and games. You know, we're always out there for the gamers. So I don't mind if in the list of questions we get other topics.
I reckon if we loosen it too much, that's what she said there, but if we loosen it too much, we're going to get like, who was your first teenage crush? And in 90210, and it's going to just more movie questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, keep them coming in. So we got at Bobet336. This is a good question. This is what
I'm
like.
Supposed to the shit.
This is really. This is one that's gonna. This is good.
We love you guys, really. Thank you for sending these in.
If you could interview anyone on your podcast, pick one that's dead and one that's alive. Who would it be? Movie related. They put movie related. That's good. So we could get them on.
Robin Williams. So I imagine it'd be hilarious.
Not now.
Yeah. So, Robin, tell us about your performance in...
Stop there, please.
Mrs. Doubtfire. Robin? No.
I'd say Robin Williams is the dead choice.
Yep.
The live choice.
We could get him on the podcast. Anyone you want.
Apparently there's no one interesting alive. Do you know what? Clint Eastwood.
He's supposed to be really arsey, isn't he?
I think you're just thinking of Gran Torino.
Oh, yeah, racist.
I think it'd be really interesting to speak to. He's been around in Hollywood for 40, 50 years. So.
Do you know who I would love to interview? And if I had more time to think about this, I might think someone else. But off the top of my head, I'd love to interview Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, no.
Because he's so good as Loki.
Yeah.
In the Avengers and Thor films. He's so good. And he's also he's clearly a cool dude. You know when he turned up to San Diego Comic-Con as Loki in character?
He just seems like a really nice guy as well, doesn't he?
I'd love to have a chat with him. So he'd be my alive one. Who would be my dead one? I don't know. Mark, any thoughts?
For dead, I would pick Heath Ledger.
Nice.
Because one ever got to really interview him after The Dark Knight. And he never got to...
I'd just love to speak to him about 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
The prequel to Dark Knight.
I would love to just to sit and talk to him about, how he's been leading up to Dark Knight and stuff like that. And Adam would just be there jizzing, He would absolutely love it. Bring back Mountain.
It'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Alive, right now, Edgar Wright.
That'd be cool.
I'd talk to him about space. I'd talk to him about what happened with Ant-Man. And I'd talk to him about how good Scott Pilgrim is and what he's got. He'd be great. Come on, man. It's called Skip to the End. He'd love it.
He'd bloody love that.
If you are listening to this, give us a ring.
Yeah.
Come on, Ben. One more. Someone's alive.
I've got my alive one.
Oh, yeah. Who was it?
I can't remember now.
Tom Hiddleston. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fine, isn't it? Who's dead? That's
a Carl Pilkington question.
Who's dead right now? No, you could pick Bruce Lee.
He is quite dead, but I don't really.
No, he's not. He's undercover.
Oh, that's true. With Elvis.
This is hard.
Do you know what? Off the top of my head, I will say, because we talked about this guy in some of his old recently, was Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah.
He always struck me as just a very cool, very funny dude. I would happily have a chat with him.
He would be good to interview. He'd just make you laugh the whole time.
It's the weirdest dinner party ever.
Yeah.
Well, because half of them are skeletons.
Finally, Andy Thurston via Facebook. The last movie you watched that was the biggest letdown, not allowed Interstellar, listen to your episode.
Foxcatcher.
Yeah, Foxcatcher. We're not allowed Birdman. That.
Something else. Birdman was not a letdown.
For
it was
you.
Great. Okay. A film that you really, really got let down by and you're not allowed Interstellar. You actually put in a listen to your review of Interstellar. Totally agree. Keep up the good work, guys.
Cheers. That's nice of him. Shame. Well, Sin City 2 then.
Yeah. Sin City... Take your pick. Foxcatcher, Birdman, Sin City 2. Very let down by all.
Foxcatcher. It's a horror that's just come out, which I read about, which was supposed to be superb. And it's actually on our website, skiptheend.co.uk. I actually reviewed this. It's called Honeymoon. And read the review, but to cut a long story short, it's the biggest pile of dog shit I've seen in a long time. And honestly, I wouldn't piss on it if it's on fire. And it's an atrocious abortion for film. The acting is dog shit, and it's a piece of shit.
Shit, piss and abortion, all in one short review.
There you go. If you want to put that on your DVD case, go for
I hope
shit,
this actual
piss, abortion.
Type review is better than this.
It is. Yeah. There are linking words between shit, right, piss, okay, and abortion. Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, keep your questions coming. Skiptheend.co.uk. We'll give you the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter, the email. It gives you every avenue to contact us apart from our address.
Okay, so the rewatch. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this as a segment for the past two podcasts.
I feel we should have a jingle by now.
We should actually.
Rewatch.
Shit. Nice.
Yeah. Rewatch some shit.
But we've had so far Ben. You gave us
Die Hard.
Die Hard, which of course we all loved.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, you gave us
Herpes.
And other than that, though.
And Westworld, yeah. And we all loved that. So I thought it was time to... And I can only profusely apologise for this. I thought it was time to break that record of good films of yeah. two and watch Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Mm.
So I can see Ben's actually raring to go here. So go on then, Ben. Thoughts?
Well, I don't accept your apology, Adam. because I hate you for making me watch this again. So, fuck you, Adam, and fuck you, George Lucas. Because George Lucas was sat there in his living room, right, in the mid-90s, thinking, OK, my cash cow, Star Wars, I want to pump some more milk out of it. What am I going to do? Let's do a prequel, right? So what do the kids love? What am I really going to get the kids into? What did the kids love in the 70s? The kids loved space opera. They loved swashbuckling heroes like Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. They loved the damsel in distress who turned out to be a hardcore kick-ass leader in Princess Leia. They loved these crazy little droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO. They loved this awesome villain, Darth Vader. But what do the kids love now? That was the 70s. What do the kids love now? Trade negotiations. The kids bloody love trade negotiations these days.
Come on, your tea's ready. Get off the street. Come on in. Stop doing that trade negotiation. Come on.
I'm trying to show my skateboard ball bearings for his skateboard ball bearings.
Yes.
Yeah.
My brother, I try and get him into Pokemon or into good cartoons. He's like, Ben, I know I'm 9, but I'm all about the trade negotiations. Yeah,
exactly. On the PS4, trade negotiations is nearly good.
Have you downloaded Trade Negotiation Simulator yet?
Tried. Oh, pretty good.
Oh, it's couldn't great. Get on the server. Too much demand.
Yeah. But Jesus Christ. What was he thinking? Who gives a fuck what the Naboo have to offer to the Gungans? Who yeah. gives a shit? Oh, God. I hate this film so much. Please, someone else talk before I
right.
just start ranting.
I'm going to go in there and say that it was... I've seen it once at the cinema when it came out and everyone was going, oh my god, it's finally back, Star Wars, it's going to be incredible. We all went in thinking this is going to be unbelievable. Finally, another Star Wars film. It's been years, we're going to get to revisit the Jedis and everything. The second time we watched it was together, you know, we sat there, we put it on. I thought, you know what, we could have been a bit harsh on this film. Maybe, just maybe, we were being very cool. It was very cool to hate this film and it was never going to deliver. It was worse than I remembered, you know. I'm going to say it now. We've gone nearly an hour on this podcast without me wishing anyone dead. You, that little twat that plays Anakin Skywalker, I yeah. hope you die. Because you
he
are
is dead,
the worst...
He?
His career's dead.
Yeah, but he is the worst actor. I know he's only a kid and he could blossom into becoming into this real big star.
By now, surely.
But you know, you're probably about 20 now. you're a twat. You know, you are such a little bellend because you can't act. You're terrible in this film. You are such a little shit and you're so frustrating to watch. Not all kid actors, like we all know, and this is even on our website, skiptotheend.co.uk, Ben hates kids. So, no, that's not the bottom line. Yeah, so, true. You know, I am actually quite forgiving with kids, and people like the kids in Sixth Sense, you're a good little actor. We even picked up on The Imitation Game, good little actor. Yeah. Get him in to be Star
Super
Wars.
8.
Not this little prick.
Get him in to be Star Wars.
Yeah, get him in. Get him in. What are you up to? Come on. He's a terrible little actor, and, you know, the pod... Oh, I'm getting too angry now. The pod race is pretty cool. Goes on 10 minutes too long. Yeah. Didn't realise how long that was. That's what she said. But it really is ridiculous. Natalie Portman, I love you. You are beautiful. You're such a cool person. You're in Leon, one of my favourite films. You're shit in this. And both of you were here saying to me, you can only work with the script you're given. She could have at least attempted to do something with that piece of turd that George Lucas gave her, because she doesn't even try. It is so bad. Adam, take over.
I liked it. It was dreadful. And I'll tell you what, you just both sort of touched upon the whole, like, you were hyped. You know, this film was coming out. Everyone was hyped. They were really waiting for this. It was a prequel. And I never actually saw this at the cinema, because I was on holiday when this came out. And I was in Spain with my family. And the first time I saw this film was at this bar on the corner of, like, a junction called the Hollywood Bar, it was called. And basically, they just used to show pirated films all day.
Was this in Spain, by any chance?
And I just didn't understand at the time what a pirated film was. I was just kind of sitting there watching Star Wars. I sat down and watched it. It was a terrible, terrible film. I mean, it's surprising this bar closed down now. I can't imagine why. I'm sure it's fine to usually make money off people coming in, buying drinks and watching pirated films.
Yeah, fine.
I watched it first out and I thought it was bad, but I kind of thought, well, maybe it's just the quality I've watched it in.
Yeah.
And then when I got home, I went to the cinema and watched it, and I hated it. Yeah. I hated every minute of it, even as a kid. Like, I loved the lights, show the effects, you know, beep, 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 lightsabers, loved that bit.
I love those sound effects, they're great.
Thought I'd offer them to you. But what I couldn't get over how much I loved was the trade negotiations as a kid.
Yeah,
they were your favourite bit, surely.
But no, generally, I just despised it. And like an idiot, and we all did it, like an idiot, we still went and watched Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was garbage, but that's another chat for
That's
another
my next rewatch.
Yeah. Let's talk Jar Jar Binks. We all know, and he's referenced as being one of the world's biggest arseholes. You know, I think Hitler, he overtook Hitler as one of the world's biggest
He is
people.
Worse than 10 Hitlers.
Yeah. He is a... I'm not going to keep swearing. He's an arsehole, but, you know...
That's not swearing.
Yeah. He really is the worst thing of this film. And everyone was like, oh, you know, I remember space references. And, oh, he's such a... He ruins what's bad enough anyway with this stupid accent, which is...
Oh, Mr. Sarian!
He's here today, everyone. But what is all that about?
It's a really offensive Caribbean type accent.
Yeah, he's on speed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
On speed.
I have no idea what he's on about. And everything about this film, you know, Ewan McGregor, you're not forgiven. It was dreadful. And this... I remember when they go to the underwater scene to go and visit where he lives, and they put these little, like, pan pipes in their mouth, and that stops, you know, that's fine, that supplies enough oxygen to swim underwater for life, you know. It is so bad. It is so, so bad. And, you know, everything about it, you know, we got Samuel L. Jackson's in it. Terrible. You know, he is.
With his purple lightsaber.
It's incredible. It's incredible, the cast they had in this film. Like Natalie Portman, as you mentioned, Ewan McGregor, Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Look how many people in that film have either won or been nominated for Oscars.
Yeah.
And you think, what the fuck were you doing slumming?
Yeah, I mean, look at Liam Neeson now.
I mean, I can understand if someone turned around to you and went, do you want to be in Star Wars? You'd be like, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a script. No!
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. You know, you would fire your agent. Yeah. You'd go, listen, everyone loves Star Wars, but Jesus Christ, this is an abortion.
Their agents must have been saying, you're going to get a lot of money for this.
Yeah.
And they probably did.
Yeah.
What really annoys me is the fact that when we're watching it, obviously we're commenting and you're finding new things, that every little creature on that film, there was never consistency between CGI and puppets. Yeah. And we even said, that puppet looks really cool. And there was one scene, you know, I can't remember what scene, it was shit.
It was when they were walking through like a... the not like bazaar, but the market areas of Tatooine, wasn't it?
And they used puppets.
And in the shops, like behind the counters, there were these puppets that were really cool.
And they looked really good. We both said, this is ace. And then 10 seconds later, you've got a CGI character walking past, looks dog shit. And you're like, oh, this is dreadful, you know?
Yeah.
And then obviously the guy that owns the shop, the guy that...
Watto.
Yeah.
Watto, the offensive Jewish stereotype.
Yeah. With the massive nose and it's obsessed with money. It's horrendous.
It is absolutely atrocious.
I'm sorry.
That doesn't cut it, mate.
I'm just going to sit out of the rewatch for a while.
Think about what you've done. You
Let's do it right. Okay. A few weeks back or a few podcasts ago, we were asked to think of good things
about
in this
prequels.
Film. And we did our best. We struggled massively. But none of us had seen it in years because it's fucking terrible. We're not idiots. But we've now forced ourselves to rewatch it. So, that said, now we've seen it again.
Okay.
Let's list the good. I'll start.
Yeah.
I think Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon Jinn is very bloody good in it.
Actually, yeah.
I think he's the only one who manages to sell the shit lines. He brings this gravity and presence to a role like he does in every role, even crap like Taken 12 that he's in now.
Out next week.
And next week. You said it was Taken 8 today, isn't it?
So yeah, walking next week. Next week.
Yeah.
So even he manages to bring something to it, brings a bit of gravity that Portman and McGregor fail to do. So he, for me, is one of the positives. And they killed the fucker off! I've sworn a lot in this, I'm sorry, it cheapens it, but it deserves my vitriol because this sucks ass. So bring it on. Good things, come on.
Darth Maul.
Darth Maul rules, again, killed him off.
We said that at the time, I believe, as well. We said Darth Maul. Darth Maul was badass. You could see he was badass. He was cool. Everything about him, double-blade lightsaber, awesome. He's taking on a Jedi Master and a Jedi Padawan at the same time. Awesome. Killed him off.
Yeah.
The score. It's good. But it's still good. You've still got the original guys, so it's good. What were the... at the start, what were the droids called? The little bots, the spinning little... That we all went...
Oh,
there.
I know what you mean.
What are they called?
It's not the battle droids. The battle droids are there. Raja ones.
They're quite cool.
Yeah.
Destroyer droids.
Yeah, they're cool. The shields and... Yeah, they look cool. They were pretty cool. God, this is scratching my head now. We've got one each.
Probably it,
eh? Yeah, it was...
Even the ship design is crap, isn't it?
I hate the ship design.
Yeah.
Because in the original 70s and 80s films, the ships were really sort of rugged and angular, and it looked great. And then these prequels are obviously set before these, but all of a sudden the vehicles are sleeker and more rounded and look more futuristic. So hold on, they're supposed to be worse than the angular 70s.
Technology is supposed to have advanced.
Yeah, shit.
Especially when you see that there was a giant war in between episode 1 and episode 4.
Yeah.
So technology generally advances, or warfare technology generally advances during a war. I'm not sure if that's common knowledge. Clearly not to George Lucas.
It's terrible. I'm glad we did it. It was an experience. It was
Thanks,
fun.
Mark,
it was fun.
I disagree.
It was fun. We had a good laugh watching it. We were chuffing away at the acting and that little prick Anakin, you know. The pod race. I like the pod race.
Too, like you said, though, I think the pod race is about 11 minutes long. It's 10 minutes too long.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In all fairness, this film did give birth to one of my favourite computer games around the Star Wars franchise, which is Jedi Power Battles. Don't know if you guys ever played it.
Adam, hashtag gamer.
I'm not a big gamer, but...
But it was awesome.
Fair play. So thank you, George Lucas, for giving Adam a good video game, but also...
No, he didn't make that, did he?
No.
Someone else has obviously taken his shit idea and rolled it into something half... It's polishing a turd.
Yeah, he managed to polish a turd.
Good for him. On one of the entertainment websites today, I forget which, I saw a headline. I didn't click it because I didn't want to read the rest, but the headline was, George Lucas wanted to direct Episode 7.
Yeah, it's a true story. I read
Thank
that as well.
Effing Christ that he wasn't allowed to.
I just glad Disney went... No.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Sorry, George. See you later.
We're going to get someone that now understands modern sci-fi to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Let's wrap this up with a rating, because we are on the skip to the end. We're putting our ratings up for all the movie review.
This was the first time I'd seen the Blu-ray copy of The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
So you can really, really see in high definition how terrible it is.
How terrible the CGI is.
If anyone had seen it in 4K.
Yeah. I like the little ponytail that Ewan McGregor had at the back of his head. That was pretty... That's the best thing of Star Wars Episode 1.
Okay, ratings then. I forced this upon you both.
Yeah.
I Star Wars raped you.
Christ.
I think, to be fair, I'm going to go... You can't go one, you know.
Could.
Four.
Yes, you can.
Four.
Two.
Oh, fuck it, I'll split the difference. Three. And all three of those are for Darth Maul.
Nice.
Three out of ten.
Three out of ten.
Right, it's now time for...
That's, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the highest rating George Lucas has ever received on this podcast.
I think so, yeah. Well, usually we want him dead, so yeah. It's pretty good. JJ, I know you're listening, boy. Three out of ten, that's all you got to beat.
Yeah,
No. He's got to do much better than three out of ten, JJ.
Right,
I've got high hopes for you.
It's now... We genuinely come to this podcast, we record, and we do keep this secret completely, so we only find out on the day, and that's why we didn't get time to beat the hell out of Adam and make him change his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, big responsibility. Your second choice. First, Die Hard. We loved it. We had the best Christmas ever with that film. You heard... Live, I actually jizzed in my pants when you announced that film.
He actually did.
He did.
I cleaned him.
Let me guess, it's Attack of the Clones, Ben.
It is, I'm going to kill you.
I think you might cream your jeans again, Mark. We're going to go for... Aliens.
Yes! So good!
Not Alien, which is amazing. Yeah. Aliens,
perfect.
The sequel.
Perfect.
Even better, in my opinion.
I'm happy with that.
Anyone that knows my... film taste knows that's in my top five films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Another 80s classic.
They mostly come at night. Mostly.
So good as well on Blu-ray. Looks unbelievable. Looks like it was filmed yesterday. What a film.
So awesome. That is it.
Next, very pleased with that.
Next
that
rewatch.
That makes up for that piece of shit.
Next rewatch, Aliens.
As you may have heard on our Birmingham special, because nearly a quarter of a million people have heard, you can be. Quarter of a million is pretty good.
Bragging.
Sorry, sounds arrogant. So yeah, if you're one of the quarter of a million people that listen to our podcast at the Birmingham MCM Comic Con, when we were lucky enough to speak to RJ Mitty, or as you may know him, Flynn, or Walt Jr., we were very, very lucky to get some time, but not just that, he gave us two signed photos. We've given one away, and as we promised, we've now got the second to give away. The question was, Adam?
Who was Walt Jr.'s father?
Yep.
Yeah. Who plays Walt Jr.'s father in Breaking Bad?
And the answer, Ben?
Bryan Cranston.
And the person that got that right was James Howe. So that will be on the way to you. A very, very cool signed Breaking Bad photo with Walt Jr.'s signature. Don't put it on eBay.
We'll be in touch to get your address details.
Yeah, send us a message through Twitter or Facebook with your address and we'll get that shipped out to you.
Secondly, from the great guys at Headshot Clothing, and we do think you should go and check their website out because I own t-shirts from them of The Thing. They do Walking Dead t-shirts, they do Halloween, Evil Dead, a lot of kind of horror... retro t-shirts with honestly one of the best designs I've seen. So
yeah, we can't talk highly enough about these designs. We all saw them and straight away went over to the booth to have a look because they were really cool.
The Walking Dead one rules.
Yeah, definitely.
They were good enough to give us a Thing t-shirt which we gave away on the last podcast a couple of weeks ago. We've now got the Halloween t-shirt which is the John Carpenter classic and it's an awesome t-shirt of the mask and everything made up of newspaper articles. Really cool original design. Hats off to him. Now, the question on this was basically, real simple, when is Halloween? So, Adam?
31st of October.
Brilliant. Now, the winner on this came from Twitter, and it's @blamethrower83. Your actual name on there as well is the same, so we don't know if you've got a real human name.
No.
So, blamethrower83 will go on the actual Jiffy bag when it gets posted to you.
Jiffy bag? So, I've not heard that term in years. Jiffy bag?
So yeah, we're going to send that out to you. We've got nothing to give away this week.
Shame.
But we've given you this podcast and we will be giving away another t-shirt from Headshot Clothing in the next few weeks. But in the meantime, they've got a sale on. A lot of their t-shirts are 25% off. Go and buy one. And you know, then if you win one, keep the receipt, take it back, get a refund.
Don't cheers. Do that. No, keep both.
Yeah, keep both. Cheers.
So that brings us to the end of episode 12 of the Skip to the End podcast. How's it been, lads?
All right, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I've just actually got a text saying that in the time we've recorded this, Taken 15's out.
No way. Brilliant. Can't wait for that
that's
one.
Pretty good.
I think we're all gonna look forward to that.
Yeah. Is that like his guard in Nome has been taken?
What are they taking this time? Yeah. Is rights during a trade negotiation?
I'll be honest with you, I'm really looking forward to recording next week because we've actually got an incredible film that everyone's saying is unbelievable.
Drum roll, please.
Whiplash.
Yup.
Everyone is going crazy for the film. I can't wait to see it. It's literally... Adam, you're excited, surely?
I'm hugely excited. I'm hugely excited to see J.K. Simmons. I mean, he's an actor that I absolutely love and was only really stood up in Spider-Man 3 by the Sandman, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was the greatest performance ever. But yeah, this film is going crazy. People are talking about it. It's been out in America for a while and we are going to the cinema next week and we can't wait to see this film.
Exactly. And by the time you guys are listening to this, J.K. Simmons might already have been nominated for an Oscar. We don't know if he will.
I'd
put cash money on him being
cash
nominated.
Money.
You can go and check out on skiptothend.co.uk our predictions for the Oscar nominations as well and see who did the best. My money, again, is on me.
Yep.
Oh, you agree? Your money's on as well, is it? Brilliant.
I've gone for a few left fielders, so we'll see if me and a bunch of crusty old men think the same way.
One thing I can say is I know already, without seeing it, I'm sure it's going to be better than Foxcatcher, because, you know...
Cockscratcher.
Yeah, exactly. So, next week, boys, we've got the rewatch.
Which is?
Aliens.
Yup.
Thank fucking brilliant.
Thank fucking brilliant. Yeah. That doesn't make any grammatical sense, but I love it.
Fucking brilliant. We've got...
What's our top three?
Oh, this is a good one. Remember, it's a supporting actor performance.
That outshone the original actor.
Yeah.
Pretty good, pretty good. Yeah, that's about your lot. So tune in 2 weeks.